But I got a call one day from a recruiter, and he's like, hey, there's a company, can't tell you what company, but they're looking for a president in the U.S., and just looking over some of your experience, it looks like you might be a good fit. And I'm like, you know, I was 32 years old. I'm like, how'd you get my number, you know?
Right.
But I'm like, well, at the very least, it'll be cool to see what they're looking for, you know, and I can kind of measure myself and see, you know, where I line up and, you know, where I can do better and those type of things. So I go through a real lengthy interview process there. Obviously, I find out that it's Taurus. I'm like, oh, this is like a big gun company. I was thinking it was like some startup or something like that. I had no idea. But went through several interviews, went down to Brazil, saw the factory, met with the leadership team and some of the shareholders and those type of things, and really kind of learned the trajectory that the company was going. You know, my impression of Taurus at the time was, you know, not a gun that I would own. You know, I was almost a gun snob working at Walther, you know, carrying Walthers exclusively, those type of things.
Speaking of revolver stuff, you know, I don't think I've ever even owned a revolver at this point. I think it's time for me to own a revolver, but I've been seeing some of the, like, I think they're called, people call them the Space Cowboy revolvers lately, to where it's got a rail on it, got a light, it's got an optic mounted on it, and I think that might be where I go, is some cyberpunk / space cowboy stuff. So,
what do you want to use it for? Anything?
It's scary.
Just to have fun.
Yeah, just every once in a while I'll be like, you know what? I feel like being a space cowboy today. Let's throw on the old revolver.
Yeah, we make some wild, wild stuff there. I don't know if you guys have seen some of our Raging Hunter line, but they're just these massive revolvers.
Yeah.
We have a 460 that has a 10-inch barrel with a big compensator on it. I took it over to South Africa and shot a Cape Buffalo with it at 4 yards.
Oh.
It was exciting.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Aren't those the most dangerous animal?
Yeah, they kill more hunters than anything over there. Just because they have a lot more interaction with hunters. But but that thing, you know, with a 10-inch barrel, it's a damn rifle. It's a 275 grain Barnes bullet going around 2,100 feet per second.
Jeez.
So it's
a hand cannon, a literal hand cannon.
But with a big compensator on it, the recoil's fantastic. So, yeah.
That's cool. That's definitely always cool to get out. I don't think I've ever hunted with a pistol. I've shot a few squirrels with a .22 pistol, but that's
about it. Nice.
Yeah, I my first handgun hunt, I went after Nilguy down here at the King Ranch before we brought the 460 out. And then one time over in Africa, just did a big warthog cull with the .44 Magnum. And then, this one, so... Definitely a different environment. My buddy, I don't know if you guys follow Field Ethos at all, but kind of new up and coming media platform in our space. They always say handgun hunting is like archery hunting, but you get to recover the animal. It's kind of funny.
Fish would definitely approve of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's always
blasting deer.
Deer with the craziness, everything out there. Do you want to roll in?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that. Cool. I guess it's like, got my camera, so.
You've been out for a while. You've been in the sun all week.
So. Yeah, dude, that was a brutal 4 days.
Yeah, but at least it's 106 today.
Yeah,
the hottest
there's only 104. There's only 104 yesterday.
I'm ready for fall.
Well, welcome to the Big Tech Soreness Podcast. I'm Ike, we have Chris, and then we're joined today with Brett from Taurus, Brett Voorhees, so... Thanks for coming down.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for showing me around earlier. And, yeah, happy to come down and chat with you guys. I'm excited about it.
Awesome. Yep. Nope. After you, sir.
After you.
So, I guess, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of who Brett is, how did you get started, and what you got going on?
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into the industry thinking it would be cool to work in the industry, right? I was in college and just with a couple of my buddies that I lived with, we always were, you know, watching hunting TV shows, things like that. We're Like, man, how cool would it be if we could get jobs in the industry? And so the kind of the short version of that story and the cool part is I got a job in the industry while we were in college, and then both of those guys work at Loophole today.
Oh.
And so, like, we all did it and made it happen. So it's been kind of a fun dynamic in our group. But, yeah, it's really kind of, I hate to say, like, pursuing your passion or doing something that, you know, if you enjoy work, you don't really work, all that kind of stuff. But it is that, I mean, I can't imagine myself being in a different industry or selling software or doing, because I don't know anything about that, number one, but I'm also, I don't care about it.
Right.
But, you know, I live like my everyday life with the things that we make. So, you know, I go and take training classes, I hunt, I do all these things, carry a gun every single day. And the fact that I'm also like doing that at work is also like really exciting for me, because it is something I truly care about. And so it makes kind of the dedication to work that much easier when it relates to your personal life so much more.
Yeah. You have a lot more interest in and passion for it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So yeah, I don't know. You want to talk like origin story?
Oh yeah. So we were already talking about it, and I stopped you before the podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, stop. That sounds cool.
So, yeah. Let's dive into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's dive into that. So
I grew up out in Oregon. I was going to college out there, and I learned kind of after my group of friends, we all had that discussion and were looking at different companies and stuff. I started researching, and I found out that a company called Crimson Trace was actually in my hometown, which I had no idea. And so, you know, I was an accounting student at Oregon, reached out to them and just said, hey, I'm interested in a summer internship. Anything you guys have? And they had just brought a new CFO on, and he's like, hey, I have all these projects. This sounds great. Come in and meet me, and we'll talk about it. And so I go in and meet with him and kind of talk about what it would look like. And then it kind of out of left field, he's like, hey, do you know so-and-so? Or he asked what high school I went to, I guess. And then he asked if I knew this guy, which I had played football with him since like third grade. I'm like, yeah, of course. He's one of my best friends, all this stuff. And he's like, oh, I was his dad's best man at his wedding.
Oh.
And so it was just kind of like this cool coincidence and connection. And so, yeah, he ended up offering me an internship, and I stayed on as an accounting intern for 3.5 years, probably making less than $10 an hour, and just kind of worked on a lot of different projects for the company. And it couldn't have always been accounting work,
because they just didn't have that much for me to do. But they definitely were willing to let me kind of branch out into other areas of the business. So I kind of got to learn a lot of different things and learned what I really enjoyed, which is really product development, testing, those type of things. And also sales and marketing, got a little bit of experience there. So yeah, I worked there for quite a while, and then an opportunity came up to go work at Loophole in the sales team. And Loophole was also a local company out there in Beaverton, Oregon. Went there, had a really great boss who's still one of my best friends. And actually he got ordained and married me and my wife. So really close with him. And he was willing to just give me as much responsibility as I could handle. And, you know, I wasn't a sales guy. I didn't really, you know, I was learning. But I learned very rapidly under his kind of direction, and through that made a bunch of contacts in the industry and was offered a job to move to Arkansas and go work at Walther. And so, you know, it's a really, really big jump in my career. It was like a national sales manager type of role, basically managing the entire country for the sales team. And, you know, it came with some risk. I had to leave everything that I knew back home and moved to Arkansas, which I had never even been to yet. But you know, that kind of opportunity falls in your lap and you take a little risk, and it worked out pretty good. And so I was at Walther for roughly 7 years and just had kind of different opportunities. We had a really small lean team. And so, you know, I was in charge of sales, but I was also working with engineers in Germany, developing new guns, going over and doing all the validation testing before we go into production. that kind of stuff. So, you know, every gun that we launched during that time period, I would go over and do like a 44,000 round validation test to make sure that they're ready to go. And then it was my signature that would send them into production. So, I mean, basically any of those guns that we had, like I had absolute confidence that they were ready to go because I was the one that shot them. And so I just learned a ton about, you know, about the product development process and, you know, kind of the German way of doing things, which is very thorough, very slow moving, but they get it right. And so I learned a lot there, had a lot of fun. We came up with some fantastic products that are still very, very popular today. The last thing I worked on before I ended up leaving Walther was the PDP. So that was my project and was basically wrapping up development when I end up leaving, and then Jens and those guys kind of finish it up, and obviously did a major product launch when it came out and all that. But yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff was just really fun to me, and really enjoyed it, and you know, really just learned a ton. I was just kind of soaking things up the whole time. But I got a call one day from a recruiter, and he's like, "Hey, there's a company, can't tell you what company, but they're looking for a president in the U.S. and just looking over some of your experience, it looks like you might be a good fit." And I'm like, you know, I was 32 years old. I'm like, how'd you get my number? You know?
Right.
But I'm like, well, at the very least, it'll be cool to see what they're looking for, you know, and I can kind of measure myself and see, you know, where I line up and, you know, where I can do better and those type of things. So I go through a real lengthy interview process there. Obviously I find out that it's Taurus, and I'm like, oh, this is like a big gun company. I was thinking it was like some startup or something like that. I had no idea. But went through several interviews, went down to Brazil, saw the factory, met with the leadership team and, some of the shareholders and those type of things, and really kind of learned the trajectory that the company was going. You know, my impression of Taurus at the time was, you know, not a gun that I would own. You know, I was almost a gun snob working at Walther, you know, carrying Walthers exclusively, those type of things. But I saw the factory, I saw the investment in quality, the investment in the engineering team, and I thought, you know, this is different than what I imagined, and I could see how they were affecting change already. And what they were looking for is someone to kind of come in and help guide them on the R&D side and help tell that story in the U.S. And so it ended up being a good fit for me and them. And they kind of, I think they probably took, well, I think we both took risks, right? Like, you take a high profile job like that, if you don't do well, you're definitely gone. So it's a risk for me, but, they took a risk hiring a 32 year old with no CEO experience. So, kind of really cool story there. And obviously I'm very grateful for that opportunity, but it's worked out very well. Of course, when I came on, it was January of 2020, and I had no idea what we were about to get into.
Snap.
So yeah, 2020 was a chaotic year for everybody, but for me especially, you know, took the new job, moved to Georgia. Right before we moved, found out my wife was pregnant with our second kid, and then COVID hits, and it's just like we moved to Georgia on March 14th of 2020.
Oh wow!
So we had a son who was 2 at the time, and my wife, who was a couple months pregnant, and I dropped him off at the airport in Arkansas to fly him to Georgia, and I had the U-Haul loaded up with the dog and all that, and I just sat there because the night before they were talking about shutting down airports, they were talking about all this stuff. So I just sat there at the airport and waited for the plane to take off because I didn't know.
Yeah,
I didn't know what they were going to do, and it took off. So I went and got in the U-Haul and drove across to Georgia and met them that night. So it was a wild, wild day, but it was kind of kicking off the whole, I guess, the whole story of that year. You know, it was a wild time.
It definitely was. It would, in multiple facets, you know, the like what my wife does in her career, like she became an expert at the stuff they were dealing with during that time because nobody had dealt with it before.
Yeah.
You know, and so that in itself is being thrust in your role. I'm sure that you were dealing with stuff there that even though the fact that you were 32 And first time in that type of leadership position, nobody, you could have been a CEO for 40 years mm-hmm. and been in that role, and nobody would have had a clue or a better clue or any experience in that role.
You know, in a lot of ways, I mean, obviously the market boomed during that time, so that kind of solved some of the challenges I thought I was going to be facing. But the challenges I didn't know about are the COVID-related and personnel-related things, and you know, I didn't have a lot of skills in that. And so it was really good for me to develop, but I also became a lot closer with all of our employees because people were concerned, you mm-hmm. know, and there's no better way to deal with that than just sit down and talk it out with them. So I got closer to a lot of our employees that I maybe wouldn't have if that didn't happen. We were ramping up a brand new factory in Georgia at the same time. So we were hiring as many people as we could. People weren't showing up to interviews. It was challenging, but it was also a lot of fun. And, you know, I think the company grew in a lot of ways, not just financially and scale and production, but, we got really good teams that worked together throughout that time and still do. And so we're in a better place because of all of that, adversity, I guess.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tech's
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic MER upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those were my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Going to be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors class
in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
So how big is Taurus USA in the grand scheme of things?
In terms of
personnel?
Just south of 300 employees the U.S. Now, Brazil, we have over 3,000. So it's a monster of a factory down there. But... you know, we moved from Miami in late 2019, so right before I came on board. We had 75 roughly employees come up from Miami, so we had some of the kind of tribal knowledge that moved with the company, which was great. But most of the people were brand new that we hired, and so we didn't really have a big sales and marketing team. We still don't today, but we made a couple key hires that helped kind of bring all that up to where it needed to be. And yeah, I mean, last year we were the largest in terms of production and sales volume, not necessarily revenue, but the number of guns produced and sold, we were the largest in the world. Wow. So it was roughly 2.3 million guns that we produced and sold last year.
Taurus overall.
Yeah. And 80% of that's in the US.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
So it's a monster of a company, a lot of moving parts. You know, in the U.S., our operations are, you know, import and distribution from Brazil. So mm-hmm. we have two factories in Brazil, but we also manufacture, you know, 35-40% of our volume in Bainbridge, Georgia. So we're manufacturing, we make parts. We do a lot of processes in-house that a lot of other gun companies don't. One of our big core competencies is metal injection molding. So we do that in-house in Georgia. Our metal injection molding factory in Brazil it's like a big campus. So there's a bunch of different factories within our big campus. But that MIM factory is the second largest in the world.
Oh, wow.
So we just, the scale of the manufacturing is unbelievable.
And is that 100% dedicated to Taurus, or do you all do
it's contacts? 2/3 for Taurus and then 1/3 to other industries. We don't really service any other gun companies down there, but there's automotive, there's different things down there, airplanes, things like that.
Yeah, I know MIM's used across basically everything.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So still 2/3 of that just being only Taurus is still pretty impressive.
It is. And, you know, the investment in the technology is substantial. It's all automated. So, you know, parts come off of the mold and it's put on conveyor belts by robots. And, you know, not a lot of people, there are people working in there, but not a lot of people touching parts. Very often we have, you know, the material that is injected into the parts is called feedstock. And it's, you know, most companies use the same stuff. We use a lot of the same material as a lot of other companies, but we also have a team of PhD and material science folks we developed our own material. So we're making the material that goes into the machines now. And, you know, we think it's a superior blend of stainless steel, carbon steel, just a stronger end product that's easier to manufacture, I guess.
So, and that's back that up. That's the manufacturing facility in Brazil.
That's in Brazil. Yes.
So it's fully mostly automated.
Yeah. And I was just talking about MIM, but yeah, you start getting into the actual machining and some of those, that's all fully automated. You know, we can get into as much of it as you want, but
I nerd out on this stuff.
That's yeah. So we have a brand new line that we built that is manufacturing slides for the GX4, and then we have a product, we just announced it in the US on a limited run that we have, but it's called the TS9. That's a popular gun that we sell worldwide to military and law enforcement, kind of the next step up in terms of endurance testing and those type of things. You know, passing the NATO test. We do a 30,000 round endurance test without replacing any parts inside. We have a whole room where we can do the NATO test. So there's like a sand dragging machine where it drags it through this big trough of sand. You know, the hot and cold, all the kind of adverse conditions you would do. But on this, back to like the machining line for those slides, there's roughly 18 CNC machines all in a line. And in between every three or four machines, there's a robot that takes bar stock at the very first stage, and then it moves that part to each machine. And then once it's done in that cell, it goes on a conveyor belt and goes down to the next robot who will put it through a series of machines. And so it's just a fully automated line where there's not a human that touches it. They load the pallet of bar stock, and then that gets put on to the rack, and from there a finished part spits out the very end. And the last stage of that, after the last machining operation, it gets picked off of the conveyor belt and put on a CMM machine. And so they're checking all the different measurements on it. And then that CMM machine reports back to every individual machine the measurements. And so it's automatically correcting for tool wear and auto-correcting for any kind of changes in dimension. So we don't have to reprogram machines, all of that. And then each machine obviously is tracking tool wear and those type of things. And when it's time to swap out, the robot will pull that tool and put it on a really big Roomba, and that will go to a tool catalog, pick a new tool, take it back to the machine and do it. So we have one operator that is running the entire room.
Wow.
From a control panel, basically.
That's cool.
Yeah. I've been in a few gun factories, not all of them, but I've never seen that anywhere.
Yeah. That's at a whole nother level.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the big things that we can do a better job telling the story. It's a new process for us, but, you know, when I first went down to Brazil, I was thinking third world country. I think I told you guys dirt floor. And it's not anything like that. These are brand new state-of-the-art machines with the best technology that you can invest in making these parts. And if the parts are not good, the gun's not gonna be good. If you start with great parts, you have a chance to build something that's, you know, not only durable, reliable, but also very efficient to make. And that's kind of where we shine and why we offer the products we do at the price points we do.
Yeah. I think you touched on it a little bit ago, but like, you know, in years past, Taurus is not typically something that a name that people associate with quality. I think like you touched on it a little bit, and you mentioned they brought you on trying to basically change the direction of the company and the perception and, you know, the path that y'all are going down. What's that look like in practice?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, the reputation that we had and still have lingering around, cause it's difficult to get rid of. It was an earned reputation. I mean, there was stuff that today we would not produce. You know, and so I think the biggest thing is we owned that at the time when all these changes were made, and realized that we needed to make some fundamental changes in how we did things. So, you know, there's a big investment in the technology. There's a huge investment in engineering. We have over 200 engineers down in Brazil. Wow. Working on this stuff, and quality is the priority.
I think you said there's about 3,000 employees total in Brazil. So yep. 200, that's a pretty good percentage.
It's a lot.
It's a good ratio of engineers.
It's almost 10%.
Yeah. And you know, not all those are design. Some of them are process, quality, manufacturing engineers. But there's a big design team that is, you know, not the old design team. These are all new people that have a better method and more, I'd say more technical knowledge for sure, but they understand more about our end user and what people are looking for. So when they go to design it, the features are right. I told you guys, Joe Chambers came by and spent some time with our engineering team, and the guys from Brazil came up and spent several days with them just to talk 1911s. And so they are more invested and more interested in learning from end users. And, you know, with people like Joe, you know, when you have that kind of knowledge, it's a great thing. But, it's a different environment completely, you know. And then, you know, there's other aspects of it too. You know, if you believe in your product, then you should invest in warranty repair and customer service and stand behind it. And that was also lacking. So, you know, not only were people before, and this is really where the reputation comes from, people before, they're having issues with their guns, parts break, whatever, and then there was no warranty support.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more frustrating.
Yeah.
And I've said this before on, you know, in other, I guess, discussions I've had, guns are one of the only products that people buy that it's expected they last forever. Mm-hmm. No other. You buy a TV, a car, anything else, you're going to replace it eventually. People don't necessarily replace guns. They might sell them because they get bored or, you know, do whatever. But they don't ever say, oh, in 5 years, I'm going to throw this in the garbage. It needs to last forever. So the durability and those type of things are super important.
You know, I never really thought about it that way. But, yeah, that's probably the only industry. I mean, any other product that I've bought, has a you know, service life. I'm eventually going to replace it. But yeah, like, I've never thought about it that way. That's a good point.
I've never thrown away a gun.
No. Yeah.
And I don't recommend anyone just throws it in the garbage. That's not how you do that. But yeah, people don't generally, they might get rid of them because they buy a new thing or whatever, and they want to turn it into money or whatever. But yeah, they don't expect it just to stop working and then they shelf it.
Take it to Goodwill. It doesn't work anymore. We'll get rid of it.
Yeah. Even if it doesn't work, it'd be like, you know what? I'm going to set that to the side and see if I can get it working someday.
Yeah. I'm going to replace springs. I'm going to replace slide stops, whatever. But the gun itself doesn't ever really die.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got some old stuff that from my grandfather that, you know, there's not even a serial number on it. And I mean, cause it's from like the 20s or something, you know, like a pump action 22, like, there's nothing else that I have that's that old.
I have some, you know, really old Walther, some of the first semi-automatics that were ever made.
Oh.
I have a Model 7 that's well over 100 years old, and I can load a mag full of 25 auto and go shoot it today, you know, and it operates the exact same way that it did then.
That's cool. That's really cool. So did you grow up around guns, or how did that?
Not really. My dad didn't have any guns. I had some cousins and things that did, but we didn't live anywhere near them, so I didn't really grow up around them. Really, when I started getting into guns was in high school, and it was mainly like shooting sporting clays and stuff with buddies from the football team. And then, you know, someone said, oh, let's go, I got this duck pond at my family's farm, let's go try and shoot some ducks. So we started doing that, and then got more into hunting when I was in high school, and then started big game hunting and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I didn't ever really have them until I was probably like, I think I probably got a shotgun and like a semi-auto 22 when I was like 16, 17. My dad went and bought one for me. But yeah, I was in to this day, like my brother's a cop out in Oregon, so he has guns and things, but you know, my mom never wanted him in the house, none of that kind of stuff. So it was all kind of organic in that way.
It's interesting that of the generation, and I say that as in like early mid 20-year-olds to where I'm at in, you know, 40s, there's a generational gap to where that we've seen and talked to about with different people on the podcast where they didn't grow up around guns, but they decided to get into it later on. That's pretty cool that is happening. You know, you continually hear about how firearms ownership is declining, and the next generation might not be hunting or doing that type of thing. But I bet that's not really what's going on.
I think just the statistics like NICS checks and those type of things tell you that's not the case.
Yeah.
But
yeah, if anything, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah. But then, you know, growing up in Oregon, that's not like growing up in Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone has guns. I mean, when I grew up there, they actually had some of the best gun laws in the country. It's not that way anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, you get outside the city, maybe it's a little more common, but you know, grew up around Portland, Oregon, there's not a ton of people carrying guns and doing all that. So
yeah. What'd you do at Leopold, if you don't mind me asking?
I was just in the sales team. So I managed a portion of the two-step wholesaler distribution side of the business, which was it was by far the largest part of their business. So mm-hmm. It was an important role. And like I said, my boss at the time, Gabe Lang, he's still in the industry. He just gave me as much responsibility as he thought I could handle. And so I had, you know, direct account responsibility and was developing sales programs and doing that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. I was on the road a lot. I'm still on the road a lot, but yeah, that's just kind of the fun part of the business, going and developing relationships with customers, with media folks, other companies. Yeah. It's kind of what I like to do.
We've got a good group of Leopold employee customers up there too, that we ship a lot of stuff to.
Oh yeah.
That we've communicated back and forth just via email about different stuff, you know, and they're definitely a good group of boys that like some Glock frames back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We like us some Leopold.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all, and they've all, one of the coolest things about being in this job and being, we have a lot of industry customers. Like when you see orders go in and go out and like see shipping stuff that like dings because, or I see it on my end because it's going to like somebody's having it shipped to work as opposed to mm-hmm. shipped to home. And you're like, oh, check it out. It's the dudes from the custom shop again, yeah. from Leopold to ordering something or whatever. And that we've reached out and with those dudes and most people, most everybody in the industry, if you ever reach back out to them, they're all like, oh yeah, if you ever need anything,
yeah,
hit us up, you know, if you ever need anything special, you know, so it's pretty cool.
They have a good group of guys there, and it goes all the way up to their CEO. I don't know if you guys have ever met Bruce Pettit or not. He's a very successful, wealthy business guy that doesn't need to work. He's there because he cares about Leopold and wants to do the right things there. And, you know, when I took this job, he was one of the first people I told that I was probably taking the job. And once I took it, he kind of probably understood that I probably needed some mentorship and needed someone that I could call on that. And so his assistant just set up calendar invites for me every couple months to get on a call with him.
Wow. Oh, cool.
Like unsolicited, she just sent me the invites. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So he just, yeah, and to this day, he still just makes himself available, checks in, you know, how's things going? What are you struggling with? He's been a good friend and really valuable asset for me, but he's also there because he truly cares about it. And you could see that shift. I think he came in late 2014, and you could see that shift in Leupold since then. They're doing things differently today.
How was that change going from, you know, like national sales manager of Walther to not only stepping into, you know, the CEO role of a major gun company, but doing so in the exact middle of COVID or all of COVID basically?
So there was actually, while I was at Walther, there was like an evolution. And so, you know, part of that was their CEO at the time had sat me down and talked to me about kind of grooming me to replace him one day. So I was kind of on this path in a certain way, but I mean, it wasn't moving anywhere. I didn't feel like it was actually going to happen. I was grateful for it. He, you know, tried to mentor me in a lot of ways too, but, while I was there, just from being a small lean team, I took on these other responsibilities and ended up working my way up to being vice president of sales, marketing, and product development.
Oh, wow.
So I was in charge of, you know, basically all the consumer facing and customer facing part of the business. And so, you know, the next logical step was to be the president of the company at some point. So I don't know that was, you know, it wasn't like I went from national sales manager to CEO. There was a ramp up there. But also the scale of the business with Taurus is so much different. It's just a monster of a company. But we operate like a small business in a lot of ways. You know, we are publicly traded down in Brazil. So that's a different dynamic. A lot of moving parts down there, but you know, in the US, we just kind of operate as this small team that collaborates really well. And, we haven't lost the culture to be like this big monster of a company, like some of the big companies you see in our industry that do a lot of acquisitions and those type of things. You see that culture decline, and we haven't allowed that to creep in, I guess.
That's refreshing to hear. Yeah, I know there's a certain segment of the industry that's just is not really they're not so much focused on the product. It's more it's just another I guess revenue generator.
Yeah.
So that's.
Yeah, we kind of look at product a little differently. You know, we look at ourselves in a lot of ways, but a lot of how we judge ourselves is our average sales price per gun mm-hmm. versus Ruger and Smith, the ones that you can get publicly available data. And so we try to get gauge because we want to be in the price leader position. We have the ability to do it and be very profitable. Mm-hmm. But if we can creep that average price per gun up $10, $15 every once in a while, we look to do that. And so we use new products to drive most of that, you know, because we focus on volume a lot. We have a big factory and we need to keep volume to be very high. But in a lot of ways, like, our new product initiatives are changing our brand and changing the financial thing at the same time. And so it's just kind of a good initiative for us to focus on because the return is much better.
Yeah. I think when we go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, when we were talking earlier, I think you said you've done 50 new releases this year.
And yeah.
I think you said most of those were just like line extensions.
Yeah. You know, like, I feel like we're doing some innovative stuff, which is the exciting part. But we have a huge product line. I don't know how many different models we have through, and we have three different companies, right? So it's Taurus, Rossi, and Heritage. Mm-hmm. And those are all very different brands, different product lines. But like we came out with, we've always done a ton of revolvers. We're the largest revolver manufacturer in the world. But we didn't have an optic ready carry revolver. So we did that. We're really the first production version of that. You know, there was some one-off where you could get a gunsmith to make it for you. But we did it straight from production and didn't add a lot of cost to it. And that's worked out really well. So we'll keep rolling that out in different lines. So when I say line extensions, that's, it's taking 856 and bringing out a optic ready 856, which is still a different gun, right? Yeah. It's giving someone more ability to mount an optic or mount something on it.
Speaking of revolvers, Caleb.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing. Before I get into Caleb, one of the kind of hiring strategies that we've had is bringing in people, I'm not going to say like me, but bringing in people with the same mindset. So we want to have real end users that are affecting the business. And so Caleb was definitely one of those, and Caleb Giddings is who we're talking about. Widely regarded as one of the best revolver shooters and revolver trainers out there. His background is in writing and in media. And so, I've known Caleb for probably 10 or 12 years at this point. I brought him in on a focus group in June of 2020. And Caleb was not a Taurus fan at the time, but that's why I wanted him there, because I knew, if you know Caleb, he's going to speak his mind.
Absolutely.
He's not going to sugarcoat things. But what we came out of that focus group, it was like a product development focus group session. What we came out of that with was the executive grade series of guns that have been widely popular. I think this optic ready gun was a topic we discussed. And then there's probably still 12 new initiatives that are yet to come out from that or have come out recently. But Caleb saw the company's willingness to learn and step out of the box and do things differently than what we have. And so he was impressed by that, I think. So when we approached him and said, hey, we want more marketing talent here to help us tell a story, he was like, I'm in. I can tell this organically. You know, he wasn't interested in something just for the job. Mm-hmm. He's like, you can't pay me to be excited. I need to be excited, and then we can work together. And so it's really cool that it was kind of organic that he was willing to do that. And you know, like, we had Cody Osborne on staff for a little while. He recently just left and went back to Walther, which I'm happy for him, but I'm not happy he left. But but no, I'm happy for Cody. But, you know, same type of guy. He's a real shooter. He wants to advance the brand with real shooters. And so that's really what we're trying to do. And like, one small story on how we do that, we bring our sales reps from all over the country in once a year into Bainbridge and do a sales meeting with them. And so there's 65 guys that come in, and we kind of stagger them through the week to make it a more manageable group. But last year we brought in, Cody was teaching some classes with them. So we have an indoor range that we were able to use, and Cody, you know, taught them some concealed carry stuff and more tactical use. And then we brought in, Jesse Harrison and Casey Sebio, to do some of it also. Well, this year Cody was leaving and Caleb had some military obligations, and the plan was for Caleb to do a revolver class, but he had some military stuff pop up. So Caleb picked up the phone and got Chuck Haggard to come.
Oh, wow.
and I was out of the country during this week, and I'm like, you sons of bitches. Yeah. Like, you got free training from Chuck Haggard. But like, the investment in getting the product knowledge and the end user knowledge into people that represent our company is vital. And being able to do stuff like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
We need to put him on the short list to get Chuck down here.
Yeah. Next time you'll have Chuck out, let me know. I want to go.
Yeah.
I want to go take a Haggard class for free.
I've got his number.
I did a small block at, I think, the PNS Summit with however many years ago. Some low light stuff.
Yeah, he's the man. And then, we just did another kind of product development roundtable a couple months ago. And Daryl Bolke came out. Brian Eastridge came out, and Caleb was there. So having those type of people that, you know, 4 years ago wouldn't do anything with our brand.
Yeah.
Having those kind of people getting involved and helping us out is really cool. Yeah. We can learn a lot from them. And, you know, I think it gives our brand credibility too, but, you know, we're learning from them is what it is.
It sounds like y'all are doing a lot of those focus groups, because I've heard you mention it a couple of times now. What does that process look like?
Yeah, so we try to keep kind of fresh ideas coming in, so we don't always use the same people. The first one that we did, we had Steve Fisher there, Caleb. I don't know if you guys know Ron Dan. He recently just went to work at Davidson's, but he was a longtime industry guy. But getting a lot of like really high-end product knowledge people out there is really the key. And it's not like, oh, I think these guns are selling well, you guys should copy that. We come up with new ideas and we keep it in the context of Taurus. So, you know, if it's something that we think will advance our brand, like the executive grade idea that we came up with, that's kind of where the focus is. Now, this last one with Daryl Bulkey and stuff, we have some projects that we just kicked off from that are, I mean, all new cartridges, a class of revolver that doesn't exist right now. So it's a lot of development, but it's going to be really, really fun when it finally comes out. It's stuff that doesn't exist today. Maybe it has in the past, but it went away. And then on this new cartridge that we're looking at is, you know, it's a big advancement for what it's going to be able to provide. So it's really exciting to be kind of on the leading edge of that.
I know you probably can't talk about it much. Is it a semi-auto or a revolver?
It's a revolver. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, it's a revolver.
I won't bug you for too much info.
I'll tell you off the air.
Okay.
Cool. So on the manufacturing side, with that many projects and that many lines, for instance, like on any given day, how many different models are being produced in Georgia?
In Georgia, we have 8 assembly lines. Some of them are double, but so all the Heritage is made there. Your Heritage is 100% U.S. made.
Did y'all move that from Florida?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We purchased Heritage in 2012 and it was in our Miami factory down there, and then we moved it up. So we have several lines of Heritage. The TX-22 is made there. We make GX-4s there. We assemble GX-4s there. Most of the components are coming from Brazil. We have a couple lines for capacity overrun. So if we're maxed out in Brazil, we can make G3, G3C stuff here. We have a little tip-up barrel 22, kind of Tomcat-ish 22 pistol that we make there. And I think that's it. But yeah, we have like 8 assembly lines there.
Okay. So you can do 8 products at one time?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much?
Yeah. Yeah. And our assembly workers are cross-trained. So like this summer, obviously demand goes down. We don't need to make as much. We'll flex them out and do different things with them.
Cool. We always wonder how that works, you know, because like you see with like ammo companies or some smaller ammo companies, depending on like, hey, if we're tooled up for, you know, if we're tooled up for 9mm, that's all we're making for the next 8 months because it costs so much to switch
it's
product
a, it's
lines.
A or, week, you know, it takes a week to change all the machines over and do all that. It's the big ammo companies, it's a big thing. It's a lot of effort to change over and do different things like that. Guns, you can be a little more flexible. The actual assembly cells are not very expensive to kind of craft. We make everything in-house for those. So all the fixtures and everything we make, we can flex them out and it doesn't take up a lot of space in our factory. I mean, our factory is 205,000 square feet and we're only using 40% of that today. Oh, wow. So we built it for growth and expansion.
That's cool. So what does that look like numbers wise? How many guns is Taurus USA putting out?
So our max capacity is 4,000 a day. We're building probably 2,500 a day today. But
still,
if we have the need to run everything, we can turn it on real fast. And back in 21, and I think these numbers are publicly available, so I'm not really sharing anything if you know where to look. Back in 21, Heritage alone, we made 537,000 of them. And we sold 537,000 of them. So
that's a lot of Rough Riders.
Yeah. A lot of $120 22 revolvers. But yeah, you can, you know, we're set up and our operations guys are amazing. They're the best in the industry, I think. But we're set up where we can flex it up and down when we need to.
That's cool.
It's nice having that capacity, you know, because, you know, 2020 and 21, we saw the need, anyone that had the capacity or the available ability to produce could pretty much take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we try to stay here where we're flexible. I mean, we're not doing thousands of stuff, but, you know, we've been slow, summer slump, you know, economy is what it is. And, you know, and a 70 to 100 order day was not, you know, it was kind of like the norm. Like, mm-hmm. that's what we're doing. And then we had a pretty good weekend. Mm-hmm. We put 800 orders out the door on Tuesday with a third of the staff.
Yeah, that was
that we typically have. And so it was cool to see everybody, you know, pitch in and go from, you know, 80 to 800, mm-hmm. you know, without, we still took lunch. We even, Maddie bought pizza for everybody. Oh, so nice. we still even had a lunch break, which, you know, it's cool to be able to have that flex space and capacity whenever you need it. And I mean, 80 to 8,000 or whatever. I mean, that's really cool.
No, it's really fun to be a part of a company that has that ability. You know, I don't know that I would have been the right guy to grow it to that, you know, all along. But certainly when I came in, you know, the factory was brand new. It wasn't running full capacity. It was kind of still in process. But our operations guys are top notch.
That's cool.
So the new pistol, the GX4 Optics Ready, mm-hmm. When does that launch?
It launches at the end of the month.
Okay, cool.
But we can talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's.
We'll leak it on this podcast.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah, so we're the GX4 line for us has been, you know, it's kind of our top shelf model or whatever you want. You know, it's kind of what we want Taurus to be. Mm-hmm. So we're leaning into that pretty heavy. This new model, we call it the GX4 Carry. Not a totally brand new concept, but, you know, it's basically a Glock 43X 48 size gun, a little bit thinner than a Glock 19, 15 round capacity, kind of all the stuff that you would want in that. And we call it the carry model because it is the ideal carry size gun. You know, the Glock 19 for a long time was that. You know, you can step down to a Glock 43X, but you're only carrying 10 rounds. So, you know, we feel like we did the right thing there, getting it in a really, really thin package, but with 15 round capacity. You can mount a Streamlight TLR 7A on it, and it's flush with the muzzle. Direct mount micro footprint optics on it. The sights are interchangeable with really any Glock sights. So that's, you know, opens up the aftermarket side of things. Yeah, and then, you know, there's other stuff that the platform will lend itself to, you know, just being a kind of a chassis type of gun. There's a lot of cool things we can do with that for the future. So, yeah, it's really, really exciting for us. You know, we think we do that style of gun as good or better than what else is out there. And all the guns in that space are really good. You know, the 365s, the Hellcats, they're all really solid guns. So, you know, this is just our version of that. I feel like our trigger's better than what those other ones have. That's one thing that I like to focus on. And, you know, coming from Walther, we always had the best triggers. So mm-hmm. that's something I strive for. But, you know, in terms of reliability and the features you're getting, DLC, coated barrel, just a really robust and reliable gun for, you know, south of $400 retail.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really compelling package, I think.
Yeah.
You were nice enough to send us one, and we were planning on doing a video on that separately from the podcast and get some range time with it. But one of the things that I've noticed about it, one, I do like the trigger in it. I haven't shot it yet, but I've definitely dry fired it around here a little bit. And Tessa was up here on Monday, and her and Mitchell had a look at it. And one of the things we were talking about that I liked about it, is the non-flush mag, mm-hmm. because it has enough purchase that if you had to strip it out,
it comes out of there with a some.
Oh yeah, it'll shoot out of there too. Yeah.
You hit the mag button,
it's coming out.
It's going out. But we were just talking about that. Me and Brendan were.
You can grip it.
Yeah,
you know, because if you're going to shoot it, and if you're going to train with it, and you're going to train with it with typical training caliber ammo, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have a malfunction, mm-hmm. right?
We know those guns get dirty if you truly shoot them. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing with this size gun that I like better than kind of the shorter grip models is you can shoot them.
Yeah.
And they shoot more like a full-size gun. And, you know, I have not huge hands, but bigger than normal. I just can't stand to not have my pinky on, you know, on the grip of the gun. And so having that and being able to shoot it, I'm going to shoot that gun a hell of a lot more than I will one of the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. It recoils even a little bit more manageable, even though none of them really recoil that much. But those type of things are important. And you're right. I mean, they're going to get dirty. It's going to, if you put a lot of rounds through it, that's what happens. Yeah. And so, you know, you got to be able to get that mag out. You know, we use metal mags for that reason because they do shoot straight out of the gun. I feel like Palmer mag, that's one disadvantage, is they don't drop free. And we write that into the spec when we develop them. You know, must have this, and drop free mag is one of those features that we put in there.
And so the big changes on this from the previous models of that line, is this a new line or is this
an extension of the GX4. Okay. So the actual like trigger mechanism and chassis and all that's the exact same. Barrel's a little bit longer and the grip's a little bit longer. Added the Picatinny rail. We've had optic ready versions of the GX4 already, so that footprint's the same. But yeah, I just think it's a really robust, small carry package that I'm excited for. I've been carrying one for a little over a month now, and it's been great. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it seems like a really good size, and it has the right features package, you know, to kind of, I think it'll do well.
Rumor has it that Dark Star will have a holster for it.
Yeah, we've been working. I think Caleb's really close with those guys. They've been doing a lot on our revolver stuff too. But yeah, yep. They will have holsters. We have a whole list of holster manufacturers we try to get guns out to. And, you know, some of them don't always have them available right when we launch. Some of that's on us, just getting them a real gun to, you know, we can send them CAD files and stuff, but until they get a real gun, they don't really have their stuff lined out. So, you know, some of that's on us, but we do our best to try to have as much of that out there as possible. You know, we don't want people carrying our stuff in little nylon,
right?
Uncle Mike stuff. That was the old Taurus. So
yeah, holster support's a big thing for like a new carry gun. Like if there's not a lot of, you know, companies or your favorite holster company making one for it, that's usually a big barrier.
That and so direct mount optics, mm-hmm. is that the option on that one?
Yeah, there's no plates. Well, I say that. The RMRCC is a little bit longer than the optic cut, so that one does have a plate. But all the other, the Holosuns and all those, mount directly to the slide.
The compact versions of the Holosuns, right?
The
407 Ks, yeah.
Yeah, the K, 407K. K series.
I think we have a 407K on it right now.
I put an EPS carry on mine. Oh. I kind of like that enclosed.
Yeah, we'll definitely put an EPS on there. I think that's what we sent. Well, Tamara has the revolver that we sent an EPS carry for.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have one of our Holosuns on the pistol you sent Tamara to do a write up on. I think she's been pretty happy with it. I haven't seen her post anything negative on it. She's usually pretty spot on about posting anything that she has negative experience with.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
That's cool. That's really cool. That's a big thing, and I'm not going to mention any other brands, but it feels like sales-wise, whenever we're looking at something, if you can't take it out and do everything that you need to do with it straight out of the box, there is a hesitation. Mm-hmm. There is a lower amount of sales when it comes on the sales side or on the retail side, because you don't want to have to buy something and then buy something else to get it to work for an option, especially if you can't get that, right? Like, I get it with like a TV or something, you're going to have to buy an HDMI cord, right? Mm-hmm. But you can get the HDMI cord when you get the TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one thing that we've taken a lot of strides in. You know, I think when I started, I don't think we had a single optic-ready gun, other than maybe like a Raging Hunter where it had a Picatinny rail on it.
Yeah.
But everything else, we didn't have anything that you could even mount an optic to. And it's like, it's 2020. Like, everyone is doing this already for years. you know, I can't remember when we came out the optic ready gun at Walther, but it's probably a Q5 match. Polymer frame was our first one, and that had to be 2016, 2017. So they were probably even behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays everybody has an optic shredded gun.
Yeah. If you drop a new handgun in 2023 now, and it is not optics ready, it better be like an older, like, hey, we're redoing this classic 1911. This is our, like, okay, I get it. Or a high power, right? Yeah. Or something like that. But if you're dropping a new modern handgun, and if it's not optics ready, you're wasting people's time and money.
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, globally, or I guess in the U.S., like, with all the different lines, like, what's the kind of the breakdown? If, like, you know, you got the Rossi lever actions, the Heritage revolvers, the Taurus revolvers, what does that kind of look like as far as, like, what percentage is Taurus pistols, what percentage is Taurus revolvers? If you even have a rough estimate,
I can put it together pretty quick, I think. The challenge is Rossi has grown tremendously over the last year. So Rossi is probably 25% of our business today, or close to it, 25%. Lever guns are insane right now.
Oh, yeah.
We just came out with the 3030 R95, so we're expanding those lines every day. But Rossi's been huge for us.
Yeah. We met the guys from Ranger Point Precision a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah, we need to have them. They're just on the other side of town. We need to have them up.
Yeah. I didn't realize they were down here. Yeah, well, they've been working with us, and they came over at SHOT Show and grabbed some of our guns off the walls and put different things on them. And yeah, that's been great to work with them. But yeah, the lever action stuff's just crazy right now. We probably have grown that company 500% since 2020.
Wow, that's crazy. What do you think it is with the lever? You think it's...
I have my theory, because revolvers are also very in demand right now. So I have a theory on it. I don't know if it's backed up at all. but, you know, like over the last 10, 12 years, we have a lot of new shooters, and most of those guys were buying semi-auto pistols and rifles. They didn't grow up on revolvers and lever guns. The old school shooters did, and then they took them a while to migrate to semi-auto. So I think it's the inverse of that happening, where they probably bought several of these semi-auto pistols, and now they're like, well, a revolver would be cool. And then they start getting more and more into that, you know. And then, you know, talking with Daryl Bolke when he was in town, and I think this is where Rossi's in a really cool position. Since COVID, there's been this like influx of people that are, you know, buying Sprinter vans with beds and things in them and driving across the country and kind of nomadic lifestyle. But you can't do that with an AR in your car. If you drive from Atlanta, Georgia to South Dakota, you're going to drive through Chicago. Or I could be off on the map. Someone could correct me
on
that.
We get it.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, having a product line like Rossi, where every gun in the line is 50 state legal, where you can throw a lever gun in your car and not worry about where you're driving, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's people just want to have fun, you know.
Yeah.
Like the lever guns are fun. Revolvers are fun, you know. And if you just bought your first gun a couple of years ago and it's semi-auto, you haven't explored that side of the firearms world. So
yeah,
I think that's a pretty solid theory.
Yeah. I think it falls into, like, as we've seen with the carry handle uppers, right? And seeing like a retro theme in, you know, ARs and that type of stuff. Like, I need another flat top AR, like, I don't, like, absolutely, I'm not going to buy another flat top AR. Like, I have one. I think you have a few.
Yeah.
Right. There's nothing
I've
different.
Checked that box.
I've checked that block. I got a shorty. I got another shorty. I got a 16 inch gun, and I got my SPR. Like, I really don't need it, but I'm fixing to build a carry handle because I don't have one.
Yeah.
And that's what I came up on in the military, was carry handle 20-inch M16, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I want my Blood Diamond, or I want my Gordon Carby, right? But I think it is also, it's like people see that and be like, you know what, I can take that and I can have an updated one. You know, I can put M-Lock on it. I can put an optic on it. I can put have a different option for it, a modernized lever action or a modernized revolver. Or maybe you just want a mare's leg. Or maybe you just want a lever action 30-30 because that is something maybe your grandpa or your dad had when you were growing up and you didn't get it, or you want a newer version of it.
And it is like, you know, even in pop culture, it's Western stuff with Yellowstone and that whole series of things is also extremely popular. And I think people do subconsciously react to that. So I don't know. There's a lot of factors in it, but they're all I know is they're selling more than anything right now.
Yeah.
And there's not, you know, there, thankfully for us, there's not a lot of companies that get into that because the barrier to entry and it's not like building polymer frame pistols. It's a very different type of manufacturing. So, you know, it's a benefit for us where there's not a lot of people getting into that space.
That's cool. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's
I know what I'm doing after this. It's probably going to cost me money.
Yeah, always does.
Always does. Good. The that's cool.
So, like, looking at the global picture, I know you've got the Brazil place. You're standing up some manufacturing here in the U.S. What other markets or countries are you all trying to get into?
So just to kind of recap, we have the factory in Bainbridge, Georgia. We have two factories down in Brazil. One does the long gun stuff, the Rossi stuff. One does semi-auto pistols and a lot of the parts manufacturing. And then, you know, we have international sales teams that are selling guns all over the world, really. But one of the new initiatives that we do have is we built a factory in India recently. We have a joint venture over there with another manufacturer. I think they're like a steel manufacturer. Mm. So not like a gun company. But there's a big initiative in India to boost their defense spending and their defense capabilities. And so part of that is they want to build out the infrastructure of gun manufacturing there. And so we built a factory there recently. It's been complete for about a year. And we're working on a bunch of contracts there that, you know, the scope of them, if we hit any of them, it's really a game-changing thing for our whole company. Just the size of the population there and, you know, the amount of people that they need to arm is tremendous. So that's one thing that we're focused on right now, and in the very near future should start seeing some of those contracts come in. And you know, even if it's a partial award of them, it's you know, company changing and will change the whole trajectory of where we're headed. So
that's cool. Yeah, because if you have a huge influx like that, that just adds to the pool of resources for even, you know, development for new products here.
Yeah, well, it does. You know, it gives us a lot more resources to invest in, you know, in more technology, more people, that kind of thing. In the past, you know, if we had a big contract, you know, that would affect what we could do in the U.S. because they would have to figure out who they're going to make guns for,
right?
And that if they're maxed out, they can only make so many guns. It makes it difficult, and sometimes we wouldn't get some of the things we need. This is a whole different factory. It doesn't do that. And it's a product line that we don't sell in the U.S. at all. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that we do have AR platform rifles, and that's what this would be for. So, it's the exciting part for me is it doesn't hurt my business at all, but it would definitely help long-term trajectory of the company.
And we were talking about it, and, we were talking about this earlier, and we're all like, oh, yeah, India's got, you know, a billion people. And you're like, what'd you say about the 0.4?
Yeah, so this is what the discussion was internally, too. I said the same thing. Well, yeah, there's a billion people there. That makes sense. And our CFO down in Brazil said, no, it's 1.4 billion people. He's like, that little rounding error that you made is more than the U.S. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. And they do have some civilian gun ownership. It's probably like the top 0.01%, but that's still a lot of people too. So
yeah, 0.01% of 1.4 billion is a big number.
Having an infrastructure built there where we can service that is huge for us, and it will be really exciting to see how it plays out. You know, doing business there is not easy. They change things on you at the last minute, but Luckily, I don't have to deal with that. So,
yeah. So I know y'all are investing a lot of stuff in the R&D, the engineering side, the the development and getting feedback from consumers and end users and doing that. Like, what's kind of trying to change the company and everything? What would you say is the new mission of Taurus, and what are y'all trying to do?
Yeah, so I think we've kind of developed the platforms that we want to lean into in terms of, you know, self-defense tools. GX4 for us is the platform for that for the future. So we'll expand that, you know, over time. There's a long roadmap there. The revolver space, there's still a lot of things we can do there and keep expanding. Long guns for us is not something that we do a lot of. I said the lever actions are growing tremendously, but I think we're going to be doing some different things that are probably outside of Taurus's normal product catalog. So that, for me, that's really exciting. We've come up with some new products that you guys will probably see here relatively shortly, not really in the tactical space, but, you know, not AR-15 stuff, but other things that, some of them are really niche products that are just really cool and fun and have their space. And then some of them are more mainstream. So that's really fun for me. I think the company probably still has a long runway to grow and keep doing that kind of stuff. And then it's just staying on track with the quality stuff and making sure that we're changing minds everywhere we can and kind of keep growing that way. So it's exciting. I mean, we've done great things, but I don't think that we've really cracked into, you know, the people that are out training with Chuck Pressburg yet, you know, so there's still opportunity to change minds. And that's really the fun part for me. That's really what my mission is. And even though we're not quite there yet, we've changed the perception, but getting someone to show up to a no-fill pistol class with one of our guns would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And we're not quite there. So a lot of that kind of stuff where we're staying on track with what we're doing, but we're going to keep doing more of it.
That's cool. You going to be at Symposium next year?
I was registering the other day. So I think I need to go and finalize it, but I'm planning on being there.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had conflicts the last couple of years when it was moved to October, but April's a better time for me. So
good. Yeah.
That'll be really fun.
We all got to get signed up and fill that stuff out and
yeah.
Get there. We usually last year we did a really good job of getting podcasts. We got a lot of content while we were out there. With different dudes, and we're going to do the same this year again. But I also want to actually take a class.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be nice as opposed to just sit behind the soundboard the whole time.
Yeah.
So maybe we've got our photographer, videographer, cinematographer. Now we can actually score a class or two for me this year.
Those are long days of training, though. I mean, mm-hmm. you're gonna be in a class from 9 to 6, and then, you know, maybe eat some dinner and then go jump in the podcast studio. It's gonna be a long day.
Yeah, it typically is.
It'd be fun.
That's good. We've got the energy drinks.
Yeah,
we'll be fine. Well, Brett, dude, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For coming out and doing the podcast with us. And, you know, we're going hopefully go in and do some more stuff today if you have time. Maybe. And then looking forward to working with you some more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Likewise. I love what you guys are doing. I told you guys I've been a longtime customer, but it's glad I could come out here and see you in person and chat about Taurus a little bit and learn more about you guys. So that's fantastic. Fun.
Well, if you stuck around this whole entire time, we appreciate it. If you're not signed up for our email list, go ahead and do so. If this is your first time listening to the Big Tech's podcast, thanks for sticking around and giving us a shot. Like us, follow us, subscribe, do all the things, hit us up, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay strapped or get clapped, I think was the catchphrase Ian used last time. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll do